Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher, 8:06 on this Monday morning. It's holiday Monday morning, February 16th. It's President's Day. 33 degrees here in Old Town Park City. Heber City reporting 35 degrees. And on the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, meteorologist Cedric Haynes. Good morning.
Happy Monday, KPCW listeners. It's time for a look at your forecast for the Wasatch Back. Get ready for some weather whiplash moving into the area. Today is the calm before the storm. Warm temperatures will be warming up into the upper 40s to near 50 in Park City, with highs in the mid-50s in the Heber Valley. But here comes the big change this evening and tonight. Winter storm warnings go into effect for both Park City and the Heber Valley, kicking off at 5 o'clock on your Monday afternoon. That will extend all the way through Thursday morning. We're looking at multiple rounds of snow, accumulating snow heading our way. The first round of potentially heavy snow arrives as we go into your Monday night into early Tuesday morning. That'll be associated with a strong cold front that will also bring in some very gusty winds. So look for wind and a period of heavy snow Monday night into Tuesday morning, where we could pick up several inches of snowfall out of that system as it moves through. Temperatures by the time you wake up Tuesday will be down into the upper 20s, so definitely cold enough for accumulating snow. As we go throughout the day, on your Tuesday, we'll have off and on periods of scattered snow showers with some light accumulation still possible, as highs are be only around freezing in Park City, with highs in the upper 30s in the Heber Valley. But get ready, because we're not done. Storm number two arrives Tuesday night into Wednesday, bringing us another round of potentially heavy snowfall. This particular one is the one that could produce some very significant snowfall amounts across the area, as temperatures will be more than cold enough, probably not getting above freezing for highs with lows in the mid-20s. We're talking about the potential of picking up anywhere from 1 to 2 feet of snow in some of the highest of elevations. I think around the Park City area, around about 12 to 15 inches of snow. The Heber Valley, I think anywhere from 6 to 12 inches, but you get the idea. Some very snowy conditions, the biggest storm we've seen so far this season, with that snow that moves through Tuesday night into Wednesday. We'll keep a chance of snow showers for your Thursday with some frigid temperatures in place, and potentially a third storm system with accumulating snow arrives as we head towards your Friday. Thankfully, we dried out for the weekend. Let's look at your latest forecast for the Wasatch Back. I'm ABC 4 meteorologist Cedric Haynes.
It's 8:08, and with a look in the backcountry on the fun with us from the Utah Avalanche Center, it's Greg. Good morning.
Good morning. Here it is, mid-February, and it's really the first time all winter that we've been talking about a significant winter storm, so certainly overdue. And for folks that have been listening for the past 6 weeks or so, we've been talking about that period of January high pressure, and it weakened the existing snow surface. So we have in mid and upper elevation slopes facing west through north and east. We have a weak layer, a persistent weak layer. This formed through that 4 to 6 week spell of high pressure, and it was buried by the snowfall from this past Wednesday. We didn't have widespread avalanche activity this past week with it. It just wasn't enough of a load. We did have some avalanches, but it wasn't widespread. But you just heard the weather forecast, so things are changing. We've issued an avalanche watch for today. It goes through tomorrow. We expect that will likely extend to an avalanche warning by tomorrow. So today we're continuing with a moderate avalanche danger, but really just trying to advise people that conditions are going to be changing. I expect we'll reach a high avalanche danger, if not tomorrow, but by Wednesday or so. More snow later on this week. So rising avalanche danger beginning tomorrow, likely lasting through the week. So yeah, please visit our website for the latest forecasts. And yeah, pay attention to that weather. We've all been waiting for snow, and we're just gonna have to ask people, now that we have it, for people that choose to enter the backcountry, definitely pay attention, be careful. Things have changed.
Greg, okay, thank you so much.
Thank you, bye-bye.
KPCW News Time, 8:10. It's 8:10. Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. We'll stay tuned in just a minute. We'll be checking in with the Executive Director of Kimball Arts Center, Aldi Milliken, with details on the new exhibit as well as an update on the new art center. Later on, Youth Sports Alliance Executive Director Emily Fisher in with an update on some of the youth sport programs and the Park City Nation. And Park City Recreation Director Ken Fisher, along with Marketing Manager Jessica Moran, have an update on construction and some of the winter programming they're offering. Then stay tuned for Mountain Money. Today's guests include Professor John McGinnis, author of the new book, Why Democracy Needs the Rich. In the book, he challenges the prevailing belief that wealth undermines democracy. Then to commemorate President's Day, author Megan Gorman talks about her book, All the President's Money, a look at how various presidents have managed and mismanaged their personal finances. All of that coming up today, right after the local news hour at 9 o'clock. It's 8:12 now. Good morning. Well, the Kimball Arts Center recently opened a new exhibition, and plans are underway to build a new art center in Kimball Junction. In the studio with details, I have the executive director of the Kimball Arts Center, Aldi Milliken. Good morning.
Good morning.
So let's start with the building. What's happening with that?
We are undergoing sort of the review process of our mission and vision and values, taking what we currently do and how we currently want to, and then how we want to grow. So the board and the staff are going through very, very in-depth review of all of our programs and thinking about what the new building will do to facilitate all those programs. And then the expected growth that comes with that. So right now we're in 8,600 square feet, and then we're hoping to build a building that's over 15,000 square feet. So, of course, that includes public spaces, cafes, and other things that we don't currently have. So, you know, there'll be an expansion of the exhibitions and education programs, but then also these other things that will be a community gathering space, almost like this community living room that's been talked about for many years. So there's a review period going on right now with the board. We've hired a capital campaign consultant, so we're really thinking about how we activate our community to support a project like this, how this will really put the Summit County and Park City on the cultural map, and then communicating that to the you know, Utah leadership and legislators and others that will be interested in this kind of growth. Of course, we'll be the gateway of the Olympic Village that is Summit County and Park City. So we're really thinking about how we can connect to the Olympic Committee and others. As we've been watching, like everything going on in Italy right now, there's so much culture that's connected to the Olympic Games, and we're really thinking about how we can facilitate all of that. So growth happening, sustainable growth happening, capital campaign consultant, and then also a building consultant to think about, you know, what does an art space, art museum look like in the 21st century? There's been a lot of change in thinking about an art center's relationship to the community, and that's really dynamic. I've gone to conferences in Basel, Switzerland, and in other cities around, cities and counties around the globe, to think about what does the future look like for our sector, how we are more active in our relationships. And so we'll talk a little bit about the Kimball programming in a few minutes, and a lot of that programming is based in our sort of our philosophy of how we can make folks participants in the artistic process instead of just passive viewers or thinking about what the experts will do, and people sort of download information. Future generations and our current generation of visitors really want to see more active art experiences, and so we're sort of trying to figure out how do we make that happen in a new building.
Yeah. So right now you've got a signed letter of intent with Dakota Pacific.
Correct.
You're doing due diligence on the property. What does that mean?
Yeah. So we want to make sure that we know what we're actually purchasing. So you know, we're looking doing core samples, soil samples, plat. Reviews and entitlement processes. So there's a lot of the sort of the nuts and bolts of what we're actually purchasing so that we're going into it with our eyes wide open.
Yeah, so Dakota Pacific is agreeing to donate a parcel, and then Kimball Arts Center is going to purchase
buy some of that. Yeah, so the Dakota Pacific had already allocated a plot to donate to the county, and so we're going to be the recipient of that donation if everything goes well, and then we're also purchasing. Again, this property is a little complicated, so it's a parcel that is more appropriate for an art space than a housing or an apartment complex, and so it actually makes sense for us to partner with Dakota Pacific. It's right next to the Skull Candy building, so it'll be right next to the county offices and the county spaces and parking lots. So it actually is more appropriate for this to happen because it makes sense for like a cluster of activities to happen in this location.
Hmm. So have you put money down on that? I mean, is
we have put an earnest money down that's refundable pending review. You know, they've been really wonderful to partner with in the sense that they're giving us time to sort of really thoughtfully think about this property. We've done volume studies. We've done reviews of the property to make sure that we can build the building that we want to do. And also, we're not just even thinking about this footprint for today or the next 5 years. We want to think about the Kimball Art Center for the next 100 years so that we're not getting into a situation where we have to move again. We want to make sure that it's a very thoughtful review and that we have a 100-year plan thinking about how we can grow in this location.
Okay. So you haven't hired an architect or anything like that at this point. You're waiting for this board review.
In fact, we're right at the cusp of hiring the architect. We're going to be going through an interview architectural selection, which is it's a little bit more complicated, but it also means you're doing a lot more thoughtful review of architects on the front end. So instead of doing an RFP and then a competition where the architect tells you what they think you should do on this property, the building program that we're creating is so thoughtful and so detailed that we can then go out and interview architects and really ask an architect, like, what can you do for us? It turns the conversation around. And so we'll go to the architect's buildings and check them out and make sure that they did achieve what they wanted to achieve on the budget that they have, because we're a nonprofit. We have a limited budget, but we have aspirational goals for this property. So the partnership with the architect is vital in this. And so we are actually using a consultant that has framed up this process in a much more interesting way.
Yeah, okay. So we're not doing a contest like we did many years ago.
We're not doing a competition. I mean, there is already competition for this project. I'll tell you, I've already received so many interest letters from architects around the country. So this is going to be a sought-after project if we do it right. We are aware of that. Cultural spaces and architects, you know, have a long history together of making really dynamic spaces. So we get a one chance at this, in a sense, even though the history of the Kimball is really trying to do this for many, many years. But right now we have one chance, and we're going to take that chance and make the best of it.
Yeah. So you mentioned, of course, creating some community, but what does an art center really need besides large white walls?
Well, we need gathering spaces, and we need to, I mean, there's wayfinding. So you actually really, people don't just go to a space, right? They need to know about the space. So we need to communicate the dynamism of the architecture. People are going to park their cars. They're going to walk to the art center. So we need maybe creative wayfinding. So we've actually already talked to the developer about what is the art master plan of the entire space. So we've talked to Jocelyn Scudder, Summit County Arts Council, already with them about like the entire arts plan. So you don't just walk to a place in today's world. You need to be enticed. You need to be, you know, inspired to walk into, especially an art space. So we will have, whether we want to have like things like lockers for our students. We don't have lockers now, but a lot of students are bringing in, schlepping in all their materials. So they've asked us to do things like lockers so that they can have a home within our home. It's a small thing, but it definitely facilitates people's experiences with the art and with our classes. I mean, we have 85,000 unique art experiences a year, and that is going to grow when we have a new art space. So let's say we have 200,000 unique art experiences. That's a lot of people. We want to facilitate their best experience so that people think of us as a dynamic cultural space.
Okay. When you talk a little bit about that local experience, I mean, you've got like a ceramic studio. I mean, how else would that grow in terms of that kind of the community art programs?
I'm thinking about, again, more space. So right now we have 20 wheels and we have one class. We have, those classes are almost always at capacity and people can't get in to take classes. We would like to have maybe more expert classes and so more expert offerings, raku firings. So I envision in my fantasy of this space that we're on a hillside, that the building mirrors and is set into nature, set into the hillside, and that people are making art on the lawn, if you will, or the grass outside of the space down on a lower level. And that could be raku firing, which requires to be outside. It's a very hot sort of experience. And so we can't offer that now where we are. You know, we could have sculpture in front of the building, sculpture outside the, we could have students out, you know, working outside the building and inside the building. So, you know, I love one of the important vignettes of our passes that we started in a garage. And the garages have a very interesting legacy in the cultural sector. Why not having these large garage doors that opens up and people can work inside and outside? I just think there's so many opportunities that we can do if we, that we can create with this space. And so, it has to be thoughtfully done. You know, when we have a gas kiln, it fires to 2,000 degrees. You can't just do it inside a regular building. You need ventilation. You need all these other things to make it seamless. And then that space is quite large, actually, because you're not firing every day. So there's a lot of details. People don't see that. But if we thoughtfully make this future building, then we will have a seamless and incredible experience. We could be really proud of this iconic space.
So do you have a ballpark figure in terms of what you're going to need to raise?
No ballpark figure yet. I mean, ballpark in my head, but it's going to be, you know, a relatively significant number to do it right. You know, and we've got, you know, plan A, plan B, plan C. You know, we know that there's support here, and this is a 50-year-old organization. This is our 50th year of the Kimball Arts Center. So this is a really great year for us to kick off, you know, the next 50 years of the Kimball.
Yeah. And you've got millions, I'm guessing, in the bank, though, from the sale of Kimball.
Yep, there's money that's left over from the bank. I'd like to not spend that money and save it for the endowment. So, you know, capital campaign is also a perfect time to think about endowments and other things that are really also add to the sustainability of the organization.
Okay, so when do you think we're going to start to see something?
Well, I mean, actually, if you walk to the property now next to the Skull Candy building, you'll see core samples. So that's not seeing, you know, something aspirational, but things are happening. You know, I expect us to start building in two plus years. We've got 2 years of fundraising, and you know, I can't stress like wanting to do that the right way. You know, going through the silent phase, building community support, really making sure that we have our, you know, our ducks in a row. So 2+ years when there's something, you know, with the building, I actually hope that we activate the land on our future property with a sculpture or with plein air classes or with, you know, a lot of activities. I'm there almost once a week, just walking the property with folks. So, you know, we'll start seeing stuff maybe public sculpture would be the first time that we start seeing things.
Yeah. So will it always be the Kimball Arts Center, or are you going to sell the names?
I think everything is up. It will always be in a way the Kimball Arts Center. You know, I think that if there is donor support for a name change or for something that may be on the table, but we haven't really talked about that. There's no formal plan to do that. I think one has to be really intelligent about maintaining a legacy, but also thinking about, you know, a donor-supported project that that has a lot of potential for donor support. So we'll see. We'll talk about that. We haven't discussed that as a board or a staff at all.
Okay, it might just happen within the building as opposed to
outside. That's typically. I mean, the Perez Museum, which is a model based in L.A., that was the Miami Museum of Art, and it became the Perez Museum. And I have to say, I was cynical at the time, but I saw Jorge Perez, you know, 20 years later talking about his relationship to the institution. He cared so much, so he supported it, and then he's continued to care through the years. It's a wonderful partnership. That's won me over. I think it's really been a really great model to watch, to see.
Okay. As I mentioned, you do have a relatively new exhibit in the Kimball. Tell us about that.
So we have two shows right now. One is Returning to Wonder, that transforms the natural world into a stage of curiosity, joy, and reverence. The exhibition brings together contemporary artists whose work spans the microscopic to the cosmic. And it's a really amazing show of 12 exhibiting artists, including some Utah-based artists. But we also have like quite internationally renowned Pippa Lotti-Rist, Diana Thader, and Josiah McElhenney. And I have a funny story with Josiah, who's I've been trying to show in an exhibition for, I don't know, 15 years. He actually has a sort of a foundation in Sweden. We've known each other for 30 years, maybe. And he's an extraordinary artist, but we've never really made a show that has like captured his curiosity. And our curator, Nancy Stokes, reached out to him with the show Conceit, and he's been included in the show. So a phenomenal artist. So Returning to Wonder, that goes till May 3rd. And then we have this show intervention within the show that Nancy created, All Sketches Wish to Be Real, that goes to March 8th. So that's a shorter timeline. That is featuring three Utah-based artists, Alexander Fuller, who actually grew up in Park City, Antra Sinha, and Elpetha Tusakanakis. And this exhibition draws inspiration from a poem, The Blue House, that speaks to the alternate lives and futures that remain out of reach. But I will say, Alex Fuller, who has base foundation here, did a talk and a musical performance a couple of nights ago that was absolutely amazing. And to see her work evolve and grow, and to see her talk about her work, it's really why we in the art spaces really just love doing what we do, because we get to know artists, they become family, we see them evolve, we see their work grow, and the fact that she has a strong foundation here, her mom was at the talk and this musical performance that we did a couple of nights ago, it's really neat. So it's absolutely worth seeing that. All Sketches Wish to Be Real on March 8th. Pretty exciting activities, pretty exciting show, so come and see that.
Okay, and you're also planning some events surrounding the two exhibitions.
Yeah, and so this is where art centers and art spaces get to be really, I think, extraordinary, where we start planning ahead and making our exhibitions long in advance, and so we can add in collaborations with other organizations. So we are doing a collaboration with the Wasatch Mountain Institute at the Jordan L. Reservoir, which is Under the Night Sky, a Dark Sky Art and Stargazing Experience, on February 20th from 6:30 to 8 p.m. And that's guided stargazing, a star creation map. We're using telescopes and expertise from the Wasatch Mountain Institute. It's perfect for families and aspiring astronomers. And this was inspired by a work by Erica Blumenfeld. She's got some works in this exhibition. And so her work has inspired this kind of activity. It's going to be a lot of fun and a really great collaboration. That's February 20th at 6:30. Then we also have something with the Swanner Preserve, actually a family day on February 22nd from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. So the Swanners team is going to guide us through hands-on art-making experiences where we find this intersection between art and nature. And participants will take part in one of the Swanners family days. And that is actually going to be a pretty awesome. That's going to be at the Swanner Preserve. So again on the 22nd at the Swanner Preserve at 10 a.m. So really fun. We've been doing some interesting collaborations with the Swanner, and I just think it's fun, wonderful that our programming and our research and the artists that are doing this sort of exploration of our relationship to nature, that we can partner with other organizations. Then at the Kimball, Evolving Forms with Clay, a two-day workshop with Antra Sinha, whose work is in the show. So this is a two-day workshop from February 28th to March 1st, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. So artists will, local artists will work with this artist in the exhibition. She's an extraordinary, thoughtful, really dynamic person who is a who's got her BFA and MFA from the University of Virginia, Baroda in India. I've had some talks with her. Really, I think people will learn a lot from her. She's a professor down at the Utah State University. A project with Alexander Fuller, a cyanotype exploration that's on March 7th. That's just at the towards the end of that show. That's March 7th on 1 p.m. So again, all of this can be found on our website. There's another project coming up on the 7th. So many activities. Of course, then there's a few spots left for the Winter Break Art Camp from the 17th to the 20th. Check out our website. We're full of activity. We're bursting at the seams with all of these programming activities.
Okay, and real quick, it sounds like you have already put the request for artists for the Arts Festival. Now you're just reviewing who's going to make it in?
Right, yeah. Now our team, it's actually not even our team, you know, we have an independent jury, if you will, look at what's going on at the, we have an independent team that's reviewing Arts Fest artists. All the works have been submitted. We're now thinking about this incredible weekend, long weekend in August.
Okay, anything else?
No, just a great, you know, grateful for our community for supporting the Kimball Arts Center. Looking forward to this review period, and I'll be back with more when we have more about our building.
Okay. Aldi Millicon is Executive Director of the Kimball Arts Center. Thanks.
Thank you.
You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. In the studio now with an update from the Youth Sports Alliance, I have Executive Director Emily Fisher. Good morning.
Good morning.
So you and the team have been keeping track of the Park City Nation at the Winter Olympics. First, tell us, what is the Park City Nation?
Yes, it has been a very exciting start to the Olympics for us. So every 4 years, the Youth Sports Alliance tracks Park City Nation. So this delegation, as you would say, is made up of athletes and alumni from Park City winter sport clubs. So those are our homegrown athletes. And then athletes with close ties to Park City or make Park City their home, so they live here now, those are hometown athletes. And so this year we have 41 athletes representing five countries competing under the Park City Nation banner. It's very exciting time to watch all of those athletes. Five of those athletes began their journeys in our YSA after school programs, meaning they found their sport or tried it for the first time in our after school program. Five athletes also received funding from the Stein Erickson YSA Opportunity Endowment Fund. And 10 athletes attended the Winter Sports School, 9 athletes are Park City School District graduates, and 1 from Silver Summit Academy. So just super exciting to watch how the athletes are doing. Historically, we've done very well in the medal ranking. In 2018, Park City Nation placed 20th, tied with Australia, in the medal count. In Beijing, they were actually 12th, sorry, 2018, they were 20th. So just exciting time to watch all those athletes, and I think it makes up 17% of Team USA.
Wow. Okay, so what are some of the results so far?
I mean, the highlights really, men's free ski slopestyle, Alex Hall won a silver medal. Our poster child, Ashley Farquharson, won a bronze medal in women's luge. She's just the third U.S. athlete to ever win a luge medal at the Games. She started our after-school program. We actually have a video of her very first run. She went on to the Wasatch Luge Club. We provided scholarship funding for her to pursue her Olympic dream. So to watch that fourth run when she clinched the bronze medal, we were watching as a staff. It was amazing. Her parents own the Clockwork Cafe here in town, so you can go in and celebrate with them.
Okay. Let's see. You also wanted to mention some scholarship opportunities.
Yeah. So as I mentioned, the Stein Erickson YSA Opportunity Endowment Fund. So athletes who are members of and train with our 7 member clubs here in town. So Figure Skating Club of Park City, Park City Ski and Snowboard, Park City Ice Miners, Park City Speed Skating Club, Utah Olympic Park, Bobsled Skeleton, Wasatch Luge Club, Wasatch Freestyle. They are eligible to apply for scholarship funding for spring scholarships. Those are for if you have qualified for a competition that you weren't expecting to qualify for. These are all need-based scholarships. So those athletes with financial need can apply now. The application period one is February 1st through the 23rd, so it's open right now. And then the second period is March 16th through the 30th. All of these sports have different time periods for when their end of season competitions are happening. So you can find all of that information at YSAUSA.org, programs, scholarships. So, and again, Ashley Farquharson, Casey Dawson, Matt Greiner, Kira Dossa, Connor Curran, they have all had those scholarships in the past, and now they're competing in Milan Cortina. So exciting.
Very exciting. Okay, you also are in the midst of your after-school programming. Anything people need to know about?
Yeah, so I know we're just getting excited for our very first big snowstorm of the year, but our spring programming is open, and that's really just right around the corner. So basketball, there's some, we actually have the ski, snowboard, golf simulator, ice skating, water polo, Woodward multi-sport, intro to jazz and hip-hop, mountain biking, all kinds of different multi-sport things for your kids to do this spring on those early release days. Go to ysausa.org. We provide scholarships for those after-school programs as well. Really easy, just sort of ticking some boxes for those scholarships. So check those out so your kids can stay active this spring and learn some new sports.
Okay, and you still have those discount lift tickets as a fundraiser that you're selling.
Yeah, all of this obviously takes funding, and we are lucky enough that we have discounted lift tickets for Park City Mountain that are available at Hotel Thanes and Jan's on Park Avenue. I know they are selling quickly. They are $177 direct to the lift, no blackout dates, and all of that $177 goes straight back to the Youth Sports Alliance to support our programs and scholarships.
Okay, and so once all of this is finished with the athletes back from the Olympics and Paralympics, we're going to do another Olympic parade, huh?
Yes, the Youth Sports Alliance is very excited. Every 4 years, we organize and put together the 2026 YSA Olympic and Paralympic Homecoming Parade. Mark your calendars. That's Friday afternoon, April 3rd. The parade starts at 5 and will be followed by athlete introductions and athlete autograph signing on Lower Main Street. We create special commemorative flags that kids can get autographs on. We invite all the current Olympians and Olympians and Paralympians who participated in a previous games. I think last 4 years ago, we had nearly 60 athletes from different Olympic Games join the parade. They will all have signs with their names and what sports. It's really, I think, what our community is all about. It's probably one of the best community events you can participate in. It feels like the heartbeat of Park City. So mark April 3rd, 5 p.m. for that parade.
Okay, anything else you want to mention?
I just want to say, if you have ever bought an opportunity drawing ticket, come to Jan's Winter Welcome. If you're a donor, a volunteer, a chaperone, please take pride in that Park City Nation. You are part of what makes this organization work, and you should really take pride in those results of those athletes. You have helped support those clubs in a lot of different ways, and now we get to celebrate and see all those athletes representing Park City Nation.
Okay, Emily Fisher is the Executive Director of Youth Sports Alliance. Thanks.
Thank you.
You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW News Time 840. Well, some county planners may change or eliminate a rule designed to limit growth. KPCW's Connor Thomas has more on the short but significant policy that's buried in the Snyderville Basin General Plan.
There's a common thread in debates over controversial development approvals in the Snyderville Basin in recent years. That includes 12 townhomes in Pine Brook, the Dakota Pacific Project, and Lincoln Station Apartments. They all survived Policy 2.3 in the Snyderville Basin General Plan. County leaders have wielded Policy 2.3 to limit growth. It's part of the reason a Kimball Junction Harmons doesn't exist, and according to senior planner Ray Milliner, housing has mostly stayed out of the county's Quinns Junction commercial zone. Policy 2.3 was drafted in 2015, simply to say, quote, do not approve any new entitlements beyond those permitted by the development code until such time that existing entitlements are significantly exhausted. Here's Milliner.
When this was written, this was right when the Silver Creek Village was coming online. Like, nothing had been reviewed and built at Silver Creek Village. The Canyons was feeling a lot of pressure. There was the Whole Foods development was coming online. And so we were getting all of these applications for big projects.
The Summit County Council added an exception when it adopted 2.3, allowing the approval of new development rights if there's a compelling public interest. Even as early as 2021, planning officials were talking about whether 2.3 was working. The current Snyderville Basin Planning Commission renewed that conversation on February 10th.
Do we want to modify it? Do we want to leave it as is? Strike it out? All that kind of stuff, you know, and then...
Why would you want to strike it out?
Well, it's a good question. Maybe you don't. But eventually somebody's going to, like, it'll go back to where we were talking about earlier, if we just keep saying no to everything, then eventually the legislature takes over.
Since 2015, lawmakers have passed laws allowing developers to overcome local vetoes like Policy 2.3 by, for example, incorporating their own towns. State officials say the goal is to drive down housing prices by increasing supply. During their discussion, Planning Commissioner Tyann Mooney opined that 2.3 isn't very strong anyway, since various developments have found ways around it.
If we take it out, the legislature might not be so hateful toward us, too. You know, the whole idea that they look at it, that we don't want people coming here, that we just want to keep this all to ourselves.
Commissioner McKenna Holly was interested in redirecting the policy to protect open space while welcoming infill.
We want to strengthen our existing communities and infrastructure and, you know, make our resources go further and also just like stop touching everything else.
The entire Snyderville Basin General Plan and its east side counterpart are being rewritten right now. The county's two planning commissions are expected to have regular discussions with staff members before deciding on revisions to submit to the Summit County Council for a vote, potentially this year. Connor Thomas, KPCW News.
Hey, just a quick update to our trails report. Laura from Mountain Trails texted in saying that she was out in Round Valley and just wanted to give everybody a heads up that like Round Valley Express, all the soft surface trails, Round Valley Express, Hat Trick, Fast Pitch, all dry. She says it's a great time to get out and enjoy the trails before the storm arrives later today. Well, in the studio now with an update from Park City Recreation, I have Director Ken Fisher along with Marketing Manager Jessica Moran. Good morning.
Morning, Leslie.
Morning.
Ken, let's start with a construction update. We can see the mine building go up in City Park. So far, so good?
Yeah, right. It's moving along. They will be finishing all the cement block masonry work this month. So when you drive by there and you see that, you know, big tarp of plastic, they're putting up block underneath there, and again, they'll be done by the end of the month. Beginning of March, they'll start flying steel, and that's really where you'll see the building take shape. And that is about a month ahead of where we had originally planned. So the project's moving along quickly.
Yeah, no snow to remove.
Yeah, right, and that's, you know, so far, obviously, all contractors have, you know, line items for winter conditions and all that. And certainly we've spent some of that money, but we haven't really had to do any snow removal yet. Yeah. And then we're also in the process of finalizing the playground equipment.
All right.
That will be installed.
When you mentioned still flying in, are we talking helicopters or just cranes?
Just cranes.
Yeah.
Yeah, no ski lift towers.
All right. And then in terms of just what you've had to haul off, I mean, was there any dirt that needed to be taken away?
You know, again, the project is in the soils district, and we did have a line item for to remove that soil, but we've been able to keep all the soil on site, and they didn't have to haul any. So, again, that has helped with the project, too.
Okay. So the building won't be done this summer, but a year from?
It'll be open a year from now. We should be in it by December, end of this year.
Oh, wow, okay. And then what about the two pools there at the Mark?
Yeah, those are also moving along. The leisure pool there, they finished pouring the concrete bottom, and they have backfilled the leisure pool. So anyone that's been there and looked at the site, the pool is a MRTHA pool, so it's put together with aluminum panels, the walls, and then they pour the bottom of the pool. And then there's a surface, a liner that gets adhered to the bottom. So where that's at is, again, that bottom has been poured, and that has also all been tented now, and they'll begin adhering that the floor of the pool here. And again, that needs, you know, has to be about between 50 and 60 degrees, so that will be tented and heated. In terms of the lap pool, that has all been excavated. They have formed up all the footings for that, and it's moving along. They should pour those footings, certainly here, I think, in the next couple of weeks. And then also they've been working on all the infrastructure, putting the boilers and sand filters and all the infrastructure in place.
Yeah, so is the lap pool similar with that MRTHA, right? Because that's been what's caused the problems, the leaking problems, just the concrete shifting or cracking and...
Yeah, correct. That's also a Merthyr pool. So, right, very rarely in a commercial setting now is a, you know, traditional pool of concrete and plaster being built. They're all usually this Merthyr type pool. So it's pretty exciting that project's moving along, and we should shooting to have that open by the time school's out.
Okay, and I think that was a $10 million cost?
That is a $10 million project.
Yeah, wanted to get your response to the person who wrote a letter to the editor recently. Noticed that we're spending $19 million on that mine building and adding only about, I think, 50 kids to the summer daycare program. He says it would be cheaper just to pay for their daycare.
Well, I haven't looked at those numbers. That would be a unique strategy. And I would say we are increasing that to 150 kids from 90, and we think that's sort of the sweet spot for us to be able to run a quality program and keep the kids engaged. If there was demand to expand beyond that, the building does have greater capacity. We have a whole community room with area that's not accounted for in that square footage.
All right. So what else will the building be used for the rest of the year?
Well, we're working on that. I mean, I think there's a wide range of programming. It will be everything from where we'll move some programming from the Mark over to there that will free up some space. So I think a good example of that is we have an archery program that happens inside our gymnasium in the winter. Gymnasium is, you know, at capacity, a high demand space. We transfer that over there. That will free up some space. We also have like a youth karate program that we're anticipating moving over there. And then we'll create new programs. I mean, we've yet to ever build a facility that we haven't been able to program to capacity. And there's lots of good examples from that, from skateboard parks to the expansion of the Mark.
Okay. And still trying to get this land lease signed for the indoor pickleball courts at Quinn's?
Yeah, we're working on that. The city council just approved an extension to the exclusive negotiating agreement, or you'll hear the initials ENA. That's through May of 26. We're just looking to finalize the terms. And another component of that is we need to complete a required public benefits analysis. So the hope is we'll have all this in place and we'll get it back to council in early spring. So other components that are sort of going on behind the scene is there's a lot of groundwork that's been done in terms of working with planning to get the needed approvals.
Okay, and the city has hired a golf course architect to do what? I thought we were just doing an irrigation project out there.
No, well, we this past spring, we did completed in the fall, but we did a study that was done by Troon Golf that assessed the golf course both operationally and the condition of the course. It was really, the study was done by really the need to replace that irrigation system. But when you go in and you replace an irrigation system, it's a perfect opportunity to look at what other improvements should be made to the golf course, whether it's the tee box complexes, the greens, recontouring the fairways. The golf course has never undergone a major renovation, and that was built in the late 60s, mid 70s. So it's just an opportunity to do that. We've put out an RSOQ to hire a golf course architect that will develop this master plan for the course, and then we'll be able to go in and, well, once that master plan is complete, obviously we'll bring that back to City Council. We'll have some idea of the costs associated with that, and then we can make the decision of how far and extensive of a renovation do we want to do or not do.
Okay, when do you expect that to get back?
Boy, we should get that back sometime this summer.
All right.
That completed master plan.
Also wanted to note that summer day camp registration is coming up. What do people need to know about that?
I'll turn that one over to Jessica.
Summer's going to be here before we know it. Right now, we are actually taking submittals for pre-qualification for those who live or work in the 84060 zip code. They can submit proof of residency to Matt Principe at the Mark. They can drop it off at the front desk or reach out to him on his email, which is matt.principe@parkcity.org. He's taking that pre-qualification between now and March 16th. And March 16th at 7 a.m. is kind of the big first date of registration for summer day camp for those that are pre-qualified. And then after that, we will have a date of April 1st for anyone else in the 84060 zip code that would like to register for that program and any of our other summer programs that are coming up. Again, that's 7 a.m. on April 1st. And on April 3rd at 7 a.m., we'll open up to the general public for registration for all of our summer programs. So those are big dates for us.
Yeah. Do you have that much room to get into beyond the pre-qualified and the 84060?
We do. Yeah. And the great thing about summer day camp is that, you know, we take full summer and then daily registrations. And the full summer registration does fill up quickly, but oftentimes people are going on vacations and, you know, participating in other camps. And so we often have space that becomes available. So if we have a wait list, we have a really good chance of getting people in.
Okay. I think that's all on the website as well.
It is, parkcityrecreation.org.
Okay. And then you've got a couple of events coming up you wanted to tell us about.
We do. First, Master Practitioner Danielle Byron is going to lead a shamanic journey and sound bath on February 26th. That is a Thursday evening from 6:30 to 7:30. And that's in our soft arts studio at the Mark. That's, you know, a calm evening to kind of awaken your inner wisdom and just relax a little bit. It's a beautiful setting for that program. We also have our much anticipated by staff full moon snowshoe coming up on March 3rd. And we're really excited about this program. We worked closely with our Park City Transit Department and Utah Mountains Shuttle to set up a shuttle up to Bonanza Flats. And we are going to snowshoe up there on the full moon. And so we're excited to take a group up there. Again, that information and registration details can be found online at parkcityrecreation.org. And then finally, our fourth annual cardboard sled derby is coming up on March 7th. We're hoping to get a lot more snow between now and then to be sure that we can hold that out at the ice arena on the hill there. And that's a really exciting and fun activity that even if people don't register to participate in, it's a great spectator sport.
Right. How many runs does a cardboard sled last?
It kind of depends. Yeah. You would be surprised about these incredible sleds that people come up with, and they're really well built and really impressive. And so we didn't really have many that didn't last for more than one run.
Awesome. So like cardboard and duct tape, is that what it is?
Cardboard and duct tape are the two main ingredients, and all the sleds are, you know, checked beforehand by the judges to make sure that they qualify. And there are a number of different divisions that they can enter. And then, of course, a number of different prizes, whether that's best in show or furthest distance. And we're hoping to get some, you know, city council people or recreation advisory board members out to be our judges. And it's a really fun day.
Okay. Anything else, Ken? Jessica, you want to mention?
I would just also add on that this week during February school break, there is free admission for students at the Mark. So anyone who resides in the Park City School District boundaries, even if you don't go to a Park City School District school, if you come in with your student ID, they can get free admission.
Okay. What a deal. Ken?
Nothing for me. Thanks, Leslie.
Okay. That's Ken Fisher and Jessica Moran with Park City Recreation. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW.